8:14 now, Ronald Surpass joins us, professor, practice Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, and a noted crime expert. You'll see him on cable TV, apparently popping, occasionally popping up as an expert here there. How you doing, Chief? Good morning.
Tommy, I'm great. Sorry the last 2 weeks, but we've been out spreading the word of efficient, effective, and operationally successful police departments in the country.
Well, good. That's good for you. Let's talk about the escape. I've not spoken to you about it. In your experience in Washington or Nashville, did you run a jail or not?
No, we did not run jails. In my consulting work, we've consulted to numerous county sheriffs who do have a jail function.
Okay, so just tell me your thoughts, and then I'll ask you some questions.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that Susan Hudson has had a checkered past while IPM, with complaints that were brought up about lapses in judgment, lapses in administrative capacity. While she was sheriff early on, she had some terrible examples of administrative incompetence, allegations and lapses, and then she also had an ethics issue that resulted in the Louisiana Ethics Board saying she has ethical lapses. The problem always has been in New Orleans, certainly in this case, whether or not Susan Hudson is a good person or a bad person doesn't matter. What mattered is less than 25% of the people showed up to vote in the election that she won. And the people in New Orleans deserve better, but they got to go out and vote. This is how these types of candidates get elected. Very low turnout elections. And I think that a sheriff who cannot recognize that these administrative lapses, these ethical lapses, would not manifest itself into a leadership of an organization with such gaping holes that people could break out of a fairly new jail, it all starts to add up.
So when it comes to the actual escape itself, I don't even know where to start on this, because it seems to me the conversations I've had with people, it seems as though it was more of a construction project than it was a, you know, like a movie with somebody scraping softened brick with a spoon or something like that, right?
Well, I think it's a good point you're bringing up the movie Shawshank Redemption, where he essentially, in this drama, dug a hole with a spoon. I think that there are some comparisons here, and that is this. People in prison, it's almost like adult hide-and-seek every day. They want out. I think anyone can understand that someone who's in jail wants out. So there's this constant effort. You know, Guzman used to talk about it. Bodie used to talk about it. The places that I've worked, this is what the sheriff tell me. I go to sleep worrying about people trying to break out of the jail. I wake up in the morning worrying about people trying to break out of jail. I go to lunch thinking about people trying to break out of jail. And those are sheriffs who also have a criminal patrol responsibility. Susan Hudson only has a jail responsibility in the courts, per se. So what else would you be thinking about?
Mm-hmm.
That's all you have to think about, is keeping people in jail in a healthy condition. That's her only main task. And it's obviously significantly challenged and failed.
So when you see the video of what happened, or the snippets of video, my question is, first of all, I don't think this happened in a minute. And secondly, I would think that the whole thing would have been captured on video unless somebody intentionally shut off cameras.
Well, the inside of jails have certain spaces that can be private for prisoners as a general concept, but what I don't know enough about yet to say is, where were video surveillance equipment? Where was it? Was it operational? Had there been prior lapses in it which might have alerted people, hey, this one hardly ever works, let's go over there with our spoons and try to dig out like Shawshank Redemption? Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all the kinds of questions a competent and thorough investigation is going to determine, I would suspect.
But the other question I had, and I asked numerous people this, is that if my neighbor, you know, and my neighbor was refinishing some furniture a while back, and I heard the buzzing of the whatever it was, a sander or whatever, so I looked out to see what it was, and, you know, they're refinishing the furniture. And here's the point, is that if I heard that, and it was outside, this happening inside of that jail, and I've never been inside of that jail, but something of that magnitude, that had to generate a tremendous amount of noise, huh?
Well, you would think anything unusual like that would be detected. Now, there's only one thing I will say, to be fair. As we travel the nation doing studies on county sheriff's departments with jails, some of my team has done state prison systems. it's hard to hire people to work in jails. It's just very, very hard. It's incredibly low paying normally, which is no excuse. It's just a variable that has to be considered by who? Oh, the sheriff every day that you're hiring people to try to get the very best and train them up to be the very best. And in this case, there may be evidence in the not too distant future where the deputies just weren't paying attention, which would be an indication of an incredibly poor leadership structure if they thought they could not pay attention and get away with it.
But not paying attention for a long time, right?
I think that's fair. We'll let the investigation play itself out. But yeah, the kind of activities here generally are not spark of the moment.
So who could, I guess, Chief, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back, because I just got to wonder about how far up this would go, or how this could go without anybody pretty far up the chain of command understanding that this was going on or detecting any of this. I'm still befuddled by this. We'll also talk about the law enforcement angle on finding the two people that are still out there. Ronald Surpass, our guest, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent. 821 traffic now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with our guest, Ronald Surpass, our friend, professor of practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, head of Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, does a lot of consulting work, and we're just picking his brain on this jail escape here. And Chief, again, going back to, you know, we don't know what we don't know, but for this to take place, this seems to be more than just the guy that turned the water off, right?
No, this is a leadership failure. Dwight David Eisenhower had tens of thousands of people working for him for Normandy. If Normandy would have failed, it would have been his fault. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't have been some sergeant somewhere down low in the chain of command on the weather station, right? I mean, these are the basic, simple principles of leadership. You're the CEO. She's the CEO. You have people who work for you who are supposed to look out for the interests of the organization, which it's your duty to overlook them, which trickles down through the organization. So I would first and foremost see this is going to be an example of where is the challenge of leadership to make sure everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. That's what CEOs do every day. That's what I did when I was chief. I got blamed for stuff all the time, but I had no way of saying, oh, this is political retribution, because you have lieutenants and captains and sergeants and corporals. You have all these people ensuring the chain is supposed to work. She does not have, nor did I have, any excuse to say it failed because of someone other than me, because you're the boss. And then secondly, if you're in the political environment, this was a little bit rich. If you are a politician, it's a little bit awkward to say this is a political attack. Well, that's what politicians do each other. Mm-hmm. So there's the two points you would want to consider. You have robust chains of command to ensure that all of your policies are followed. In this case, clearly policies must have been missed. And then to say it's a political attack on you, you're a politician. That's what they do to each other. It's all really quite insufficient thinking.
One thing I thought of is that, you know, I don't know if I saw this somewhere or read it or whatever, but it's like the prisoners have nothing to do all day for the most part but sit there and figure out a way how to break out, right? I mean, that's what they do. So you would think that on the other side of it, that they would have as much of an attempt to see how could they break out and prevent it. Yes?
Let me be perfectly clear. In the county jails that I have done consulting work since I left and do this for a living in addition to teaching, I have run across true professionals in the detention corrections facilities who I would say to you told me, I think every day adult hide and seek. They are wanting to get out, and we have to be there to keep them from getting out and do it under a bunch of rules, constitutional rules that we follow on our side of the equation. The inmates have no constitutional rules. So to your second question about what do you do when you look for these people, you got to remember, they know what the outcome of them being caught is. They're going back to prison for a long time. They don't say, I wonder if the First Amendment or Second Amendment or Fourth Amendment allows me to do something. So the police have to be one step ahead. We have to follow all the rules for all the right reasons of an organized society. But let me tell you something, Tommy, they don't got to follow any rules. They can throw somebody between you and them. They can run across building tops and hope you forget about it. They can go 100 miles an hour down a residential street because they have no rules to follow. But the police and the Marshal Service and the federal and state local agencies are doing the work that was thrust upon them by an inadequate leadership command of the Orleans Parish Prison that allowed 10 dangerous escapees out. 8 have been captured. 2 are on the run. And the people who have to go find them are at risk, and the people that they're running away from, the police, they're putting citizens at risk by running away. This is just a messy, messy mess.
Is there any doubt in your mind that they'll be, the two that are out there will be recaptured?
No doubt they'll be captured. No doubt. Now, will they be captured peacefully, or will they decide one of them, Kimberly Groves' grandson, what a horrible tragedy, double fold now, who's been convicted of murder or has murder charges, look what he's facing. He knows he's going back to prison for the rest of his life on earth. What is his motivation to not use every available means to include violence to escape apprehension attempt? These are very dangerous people, but I have complete confidence in local, state, and federal law enforcement to find them.
Thank you, Chief. Appreciate your time. Insight, as always, Ronald Serpas, Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD superintendent. We'll take a break. Come back. Talk to Louisiana State Representative Mike Baham about the session, what's going on there in his bill regarding the Attorney General's Fugitive Apprehension Unit. Then next hour, we'll talk to Skip Zaney of Lambert Zaney. It's National Maritime Month. And then we're going to talk to a professor of electrical engineering at LSU and try to find out more about ISOs, as in MISO, since the brownout on Sunday. How do they work? What is load shedding? All that stuff that we didn't know anything about before Sunday. Right now, time for WWL First News.